Okay. One of the first kashas I remember having as a child. You know, do you know what your first kasha in learning was as a kid?
Why?
So what?
Why?
Okay. What if, you know, no what if questions, right? That's what the Rebbe used to always say. So one of the first kashas I remember having as a kid was learning Parshas Lech Lecha, and hearing about how Hashem showed Avram Avinu the stars in the sky, and he said, Ko yezaracha, you can have as many kids as the stars in the sky, as children can number like the stars. And I always wondered, like, why was that good news? Meaning, like, you look up at the sky, it's like, it's not that many. It doesn't seem like that many, right? Meaning, I can't count them just because I can't keep track of where they all are. But, like, visibly, it's not, visibly, you could Google it. Visibly, there are 5,000 stars in the sky that are visible. That's less than the amount of Jews in the five towns, right? Meaning, like, that's Koya Zaracha, like, they're going to be like the stars of the sky that Avram Avinu is able to see. Like, why? Look, I get the bracha of the sand, right? That's a lot. I mean, Google that. That's 7,500,000,000,000 grains. That's a lot of sand, right? So the Jewish people have not yet arrived at 7,500,000,000,000,000. I don't even know what those numbers mean. I have no idea how many zeros that even is, but that's a lot. The stars in the sky is 5,000 stars. Like what's you know, when the Jews I was just listening to a Jewish history podcast yesterday at some point on my travels, and they said by 1830 or something, there were 5,000 Jews in America. It's like crazy little, right? And then within the next 20 years, it jumped to 250,000, which was like obviously major expansion. And then obviously after the war and after the Holocaust, then the numbers just went nuts. You know, thank God. But people were able to find safe haven on these shores. But 5,000 is really not a lot. So what exactly is the bracha of the stars? Furthermore, Pasuk tells us Avraham Avinu went out to war with the help of Shmona Eser V'Shalosh Meos soldiers, 318 soldiers. So Rashi tells us, Rabbi Seinu Amru Eliezer Levado Haya. He went out to war with Eliezer. Eliezer was his only soldier. V'hu Min Gematria Shal Shmo. 318 happens to be the Gematria of Eliezer. So he went with just Eliezer, and happens to be Gematria 318. And that's what the Torah meant. It says when he went out with 318 men. Says the Das Akedim Mibali Atosos. No. He started with actual 318 men. When he picked his army, he hired 318 soldiers. But after going through the whole list of questions that a Kohen Mishloach Melchama is supposed to go through, right, before you go to war, the Kohen Mishloach Melchama has to start asking, Mi Yishayari Verach Alevav, who's afraid, and who, Nasi Isha, and the Banabayis Velochanacha, and, Nata Kerem, who did all these things? So a lot of vineyard planters, were off the chart. They were not willing to go. They couldn't go. They couldn't answer the questions appropriately. They were not prepared for war. And presumably, Yare Verach Alevav is what did everybody in, right? That once he said Yare Verach Alevav, nobody was willing to go. And all he was left with was Eliezer. It's reminiscent of Rav Shach always tells of the Purim Shviel they did in Valazhin that one time, where they had they were doing a reenactment of Kohen Mishloach Melchama, and they did a whole thing where they had the stage was full. Who planted a kerem? A few people go off. Who built a house? A few people go. And then Mi Yishayari V'Rachaleva Min Avera Shabiyado, and everyone went off except for Reb Chaim Brisker and the Chavetz Chaim. I think that's what it was. Reb Chaim Brisker and the Chavetz Chaim. So Reb Chaim Brisker was there, and he said, "But the next scene is when we win the Melchama." Right, the next scene is when we win the Melchama. Because the HaKadosh Baruch Hu that makes Melchama. It's not human beings that make Melchama. HaKadosh Baruch Hu decides who's going to be Natzeach Melchama. And just like you could win with thousands of soldiers, HaKadosh Baruch Hu could determine that you'll win with the one guy who's not Yari Verach Alevav. But anyway, they were all fighting against these powerful nations. It didn't make sense that they would succeed. So most people are going to be Yari Verach Alevav. So that's what Das Akedin Baliat also says. So you're left with just Eliezer. You're left with only Eliezer. The question is, initially he chose 318 soldiers. Like, that's a weird number, right? Like, how many men do you think you'll need for this battle? About 500,000. I don't know, just say something like 318, not 317? Nope. 318. Like, where does the number 318 come from? And when he couldn't have that number of soldiers, it dafka had to be replaced by someone who represents 318. His gematria is 318. Is that like one of the significant numbers in Judaism? Is that meaning there are certain numbers in Judaism that are very important and very significant? 318 doesn't seem to be one of them. So what's that about? So there is a very famous Hasidic saying, Rastenberg Hasidic saying. How does it go? Rabbeinu Sha'ag, the Kol Gadol. Right? Ein Shum Yeyush. Ein Shum Yeyush Ba'olam Klal, or Ein Shum Yeyush Klal, something like that. So, you ever see Ramosha Weimka like get into it when they start singing that? Right? That's when it's like, yeah, that's when he gets very emotional, right? And like people feed off that emotion. That Ein Shum Yeyush. That there's no. There's no giving up hope. I'm like I never actually go to those events, but like I watch the videos online afterwards. You know, like I'm a lurker in those events. Like, so it seems very inspiring that Ein Shum Yeyush, right? That this, it so animates what Rav Moshe Weinberg is trying to accomplish in life. You know, this idea of not giving up. You know, of convincing people not to give up on themselves and not to give up on others and not to give up on hope and not to give up on joy and things. All the positivity that brings with it. So we know about the impact that Yeyush had on people in history. Elisha ben Avuya, otherwise known as Acher, it caused him to give up his entire way of living. The Gemara Chagiga Daf Tesvav tells us. That Acher was riding a horse and Rameir was following behind him to learn from him. Meir, chazor l'acherecha. He says, Meir, turn around. Because he was a genius. He was able to figure out the Tchum Shabbos. Most people can't figure out the Tchum Shabbos with tape measures and everything else. He was able to figure out the Tchum Shabbos just based on calculating the hoof steps of the sounds of the hoofs of his horse. Amr Leis, Rav Meir says, you're telling me to go back. Af atah chazar bach. You should also go back. Amr Leis, v'lo kvar amarti lach, kvar shamati me'achari apargud, shuvu panim shovvim chutz me'acher. Yeah, I already told you, there's no going back for me. I already heard from me'achari apargud that everyone can do tshuva chutz me'acher. And the Shlach HaKadosh writes that even after being told that he cannot do tshuva, his reaction should have been, yes, I can. Don't tell me I can't do tshuva. Yes, I can. The Gemara Pesachim Daf Pevav and Beis says, Kol mash yomer lecha balabayis asei chutz mitzei. Whatever the balabayis tells you to do, do, unless he tells you to get out. So Salvation explained, Shuvu banim shovvim chutz me'acher means we can all do tshuva, even Elisha ben Avuya. But he has to exit the persona of Acher. He has to go back to being Rabbi Elisha and going out from being Acher. He has to believe that he can exit being Acher, being that person that he had become. He didn't think that he was capable of such a transformation. Right? Rav Soloveitchik emphasized that point, that it's not true that he couldn't do tshuva. It's something he was willing to believe. It's not what the bas kol meant, and it's not something that he ever should have accepted. He's supposed to say, yes, I can do tshuva, because Ein Shum Yeyush, I don't give up on myself. I'll be able to do tshuva. In the Sefer Igrit Kala, he points out that there are only two psukim in the Torah that start with the letter Samach. There's Saru Maher Min Aderecha Asher Tzivisa Masula Hamegel Masecha. Right? That when Moshe, get out of here because they just made an egel and go see what's going on. And then when Moshe asks from Mechila for the Chedem Raglim, Slach No La Avona Amazeh. The letter Samach is a circle. It indicates that there's no end to it. So just like there's no end to the averus that we can do, there's no end to the slicha of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So yeah, we can fall really, really far. And we can keep on going, avera after avera after avera. But the slicha that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives also goes just as far. You know, it's amazing. The first time we find Yaakov crying in all of Torah is when Yaakov saw Rachel for the first time. Ve'yisa'es kolo v'yevk. And now, Yaakov had lots of reasons to cry up until that point. Right, he had plenty of opportunities to cry. He could have cried when Esav wanted to kill him. He could have cried when Eliphaz robbed him of everything. He could have cried when he passed his 80th birthday and he was still childless. And it didn't seem like things were going in the right direction. His cry is not a cry of sadness or a cry of giving up hope. It's a cry of being overwhelmed by how bright the future can be when he saw Rachel and he was dreaming of the family of the nation that he could build with her. So Yaakov, like Avraham and Yitzchak, had many, many days where there were many reasons to cry, but he didn't, and neither did they. They were too busy overcoming their challenges. They were too busy pushing forward in their relationship with Hashem. They were too busy accomplishing to stop and to cry. Now, obviously, a person has to feel emotional sometimes, and a person sometimes a good cry is helpful to a person. Certainly, in our yeshiva, we're familiar with the emotion of and the value of seeing that emotion from our biggest Rosh Yeshiva. You know, Rosh Hashanah is known for his emotion and for his crying. But never to let a person, never to hold a person back, to hold a person back from doing what they have to do, to accomplish what they have to accomplish. And this brings us back to our questions. The reality is that there are many more stars than there are grains of sand. We only see 5,000 stars. Google it. Our universe contains at least 70 septillion stars. That's 7 followed by 23 zeros. Okay, I looked it up. Astronomers, when my daughter was like 3 years old, when ever someone would say a big number, she would be like, "Is that the last number?" she assumed like this. So one of my sons was like, "No, stupid, like a billion is the last number." So there is no last number, obviously, but I just made it up. None of my sons actually said that, but one of them would have said that. Astronomers estimate that there exists roughly 10,000 stars for each grain of sand on Earth. So there's a lot more stars than there are sand. It's a lot of stars. Thing is, most of the stars are hidden. Most of the stars can't be seen. A large majority can't be seen. And we have to believe that they're there even if we can't see them. We have to know that they're there even if we can't see them. Rav Meir Shapiro says that he says something even better. Hashem wasn't telling Avram how many children he would have when he showed Avram the stars. Hashem was telling Avram how he was going to accomplish it. It seems that what are you going to do already? You're an old man. How are you going to be able to have children? How are you going to be able to build this nation that is your life's mission to build? Had Hashem taken anybody else outside, anybody else, and said, "Count the stars," the immediate response would be, "I can't. That's impossible." Right? You have to count the stars. That's crazy. I can't count the stars. Not because it's so many. It's just like, maybe put them in a row. Right? Where, you know, and then I'll be able to count them. But they're all over the place. I can't count that. It's not possible. How about this, God? Why don't you count the stars and tell me how many there are? I should count the stars. You're God. But that's not what Avram did, says Rav Meir Shapiro. Hashem said to Avram Avinu, count the stars. And you know what he did? He started counting. He started trying. The words "I can't" weren't part of his vocabulary. And Kadosh Baruch Hu says to Avram Avinu, that's how you're going to have children. That's how you're going to make a great nation. You're going to make a great nation by never saying, "I can't." By never saying, "It's impossible." Lahavdil. I once saw an interview with Derek Jeter. Derek Jeter was a very good baseball player. He came up, you guys are young, but when he came up, it was the same time as two other shortstops who were known to be much more talented than he was. Alex Rodriguez and Nomar Garcia-Para. They were both known to be way more talented than him. And they were. But, like, you know, in terms of baseball history, like, you know, it's not even close, right? And they asked him, how did you develop this work ethic and, you know, this discipline and this... And he said, growing up in my house, you weren't allowed to say the words "I can't." Those words were off the table. That was a curse word. That was something you were not allowed to say in our house. You were not allowed to say the word "I can't." One of my children had a problem with this. Yeah, everything he asked him to do, he said, "I can't, I can't, I can't." So I told him, "You're not allowed to say the words 'I can't.'" So he said, "I am not able to." But that's what Meir Shapiro says. That's what he was doing. That's what Kadosh Baruch Hu was showing Avraham Avinu. It's the attitude, the refusal to be miyayish. Ain't shum yayish. That's what enabled Avraham Avinu to become the patriarch of the greatest nation the world has ever known. And it's not even close in terms of that, in terms of what the greatest nation is. Rav Tzadik in Sefer Divrei Sofrim writes that the number 318 is exactly one more than the gematria of Yayush. Avraham Avinu wants to have an army. He was facing a difficult battle, a battle that others wouldn't dare dream of even fighting. And he chose a number that was representative of that attitude. He can and will rise above any sense of Yayush. When people tell Avraham, you can't, he says, I can. Because that's what a Jew is. A Jew doesn't give up. Rabbeinu Shag, Bekol Gadol, Ein Shum Yayush. There's so much what they call, what psychologists refer to as Mara Shchora. Not psychologists, but the Sfarim refer to as Mara Shchora. Psychologists call it depression, sadness in the world. It's amazing. Like, we never lived in a time that was more prosperous, where there was more goodness around us, material wealth, spiritual opportunities, and there's so much sadness, there's so much depression. And the avodah of a Jew is not just to do all the mitzvahs, but to foster that sense of positivity, that sense of hopefulness. How do we do that? Sometimes it's through learning, sometimes through davening, and sometimes through relaxing, sometimes through what they call self-care. But doing things that bring about a sense of positivity. Smiling more, working actively at smiling more, at being more positive. You know, when Chazal say, you know, Ezu Chacham, Alom in Mikol Adam, to have that glass half full type of attitude toward everyone you meet. Like, what can I learn from this person? Not like, what's wrong with this person. You know, say that lawyers have a really hard time with this because they spent 3 years in law school being trained to find the flaws. Yeshiva Bachur also have a hard time with this because part of the training of Yeshiva Bachur is to find the flaw in an argument, to be able to know, is it glatt? Is there a pirchan the kal v'chomer? Which is good, that's what we're supposed to do, but we have to make sure we don't carry that over to, like, is every person I meet glatt? Is every situation I meet glatt? But is there something positive to gain from that person? Is there something that I can learn? The Rambam Shmona Prakam writes, V'chein im gavra alav mara hashchora yasirena b'shmi shirim umini neginos. The Rambam says, listen to music if that's what does it for you. You know, just sing a niggin. Ubitiul, beginos, ubinyani pe'er. Go tour like the mansions in the Berkshires or something. What, you know, what religious value is that? See beautiful things. Beautiful things make people happy sometimes. Don't spend your whole life doing that. But a person needs to do these things. The yeshiva in Tsuros knows, go to art museum if it does it for you, doesn't do it for me. The Rambam. He's highlighting the importance of just taking care of yourself. You know, he's not just saying, stop being depressed already, get over it. He's saying to actively go out and do things that make you happy. Do things that open the mind, do things that bring about a sense of positivity. And that's ultimately what enabled Avraham Avinu. When Kodesh Baruch Hu takes and says Ramesh Peter, when Avraham takes Avraham Avinu and says count the stars, it's that attitude that allows Avraham Avinu to say 1, 2, 3 and to actually start trying. Because there's no I can't, there's no giving up hope, there's no Yayush. 318, it's always one above Yayush. He's going to remain even when they all drop out. He remains with Eliezer, Gematria 318, he remains one above Yayush. And that's ultimately the message that can have a huge impact on what we're able to accomplish in life, a greater impact than our intelligence, a greater impact than our charisma, a greater impact than our background, you know, how many opportunities we've been given. We make opportunities for ourselves when we have the right attitude, when we have the right sense of positivity.